Now, President Biden spent 4 days on a diplomatic trip through the Middle East late last week and into the weekend, meeting with leaders of Israel and Saudi Arabia, among others. Biden said the trip was an effort to strengthen relations in the region in opposition to Iran, China, and Russia. The president is facing some criticism domestically for his handling of Israel and Saudi Arabia because of concerns over human rights. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Did you follow President Biden's trip to the Middle East? Do you think it's important for him to build better relations with these countries? Do you think he handled the trip well? What would you like to see gone differently? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Nihal Tusi is a senior correspondent for foreign affairs and national security at Politico. Nihal, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
What stood out to you the most about this presidential visit to the Middle East?
I guess it had to be the fist bump. I really hate to admit that. I mean, it seems like you would think I'd talk about policy or something like that. But honestly, just seeing that visual of President Biden giving a fist bump to Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, that really did stand out for me. And it's the visual that I'm going to keep with me for a long time.
Let's give a listen to President Biden addressing Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman, talking about the killing of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. We don't have that audio. Okay. Well, the president had said back in 2019 he would make Saudi Arabia a pariah. Use the word pariah over human rights violations, including the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. Now, here he is. How could you? And that's the significance, I think, of that fist bump. How did he try to thread that needle?
Yeah, look, it just basically came down to reality, right? Which is that there are certain countries at certain times that the United States feels that it will need for advancing its national interest. And the Biden administration sees Saudi Arabia as a critical partner, as have plenty of presidential administrations in the past in the Middle East. And it's not just because of oil and the price shocks that we've been experiencing because of Russia's war on Ukraine, but also because of the regional threat posed by Iran and the literal central location of that country in a place where the food security situation has an impact. And the Chinese and Russian interests, of course, in maintaining relations with the Saudis. So, you know, it's a country that's been a partner for a long time. And yes, it does have this de facto ruler with a lot of blood on its hands. But the sense of the Biden administration was, after all this time, that, look, we just have to engage them one way or another. And you could also argue that ignoring them doesn't really help the advance the cause of human rights either. That if you engage them and talk to them and say, hey, maybe you should stop killing journalists, that maybe that'll have more impact than just declaring them a pariah and trying not to deal with them.
You wrote a piece recently on Mohammed bin Salman, looking at whether he had changed as a ruler, whether he could get, I guess, better from a human rights perspective over time. What kind of things are you looking at?
Yeah, I mean, look, this guy, he's in his 30s. And the first time I wrote about him was actually back in 2015 when he was the deputy crown prince. And he had just kind of come out of nowhere. And everybody was like, who is this guy? But he'd already, been launching a war in Yemen and doing these things. And everyone really in Washington, really nobody knew who he was. And now he's basically running Saudi Arabia, although his father is still the king, but his father is quite old. And the son is doing all the work. And he's so young that, you know, there is a sense in Congress and beyond that he could be around for another 50 years. And we have to learn to deal with him. And we have to understand what he's like and how or whether we can shape him. But the interesting thing is it's hard to say if you can shape him, because now he's what, in his mid to late 30s. He's never actually he's never lived outside Saudi Arabia, unlike a lot of many other Arab elites who get their schooling in the West. They, you know, go to places like Harvard and Georgetown. They get these slots. Mohammed bin Salman went to university in Saudi Arabia. He doesn't have as much exposure to the West. And so he doesn't seem to quite understand why people react the way they do when he when he does things like abduct the prime minister of Lebanon, which he did a few years ago. So, you know, it's like there's a disconnect. And the question is, has he, after the backlash over the killing of Jamal Khashoggi and the, you know, temporary freeze out under the Biden administration, has he learned a lesson? Does he know he can, can he change, basically? Can he become a more responsible ruler? And, you know, what some people tell me is, you're not really going to change his personality that much at this stage, but he does seem to be more respectful of process. He does seem to be more understanding that his actions will have consequences. And you have to remember, this is a guy who grew up a Saudi royal, you know, clearly a favorite son. He could get away with just about anything growing up. And now it's clear that on the global stage, he can't just get away with it. Although you could argue that Biden going there and seeing him and giving him a fist bump and maybe make something he can get away with it.
And you mentioned that Saudi Arabia isn't important just because of oil, but the oil is pretty important. And we've got the situation now with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. High oil prices help Russia and hurt the West. And one hope from Biden's visit, I think, was to get Saudi Arabia to push for more expansion of oil, bring down those prices, hurt Russia, help the West. Did anything come out of that?
Actually, no. I mean, nothing major. And that's one of the amazing things. Look, a while ago, the Saudis and some of the Arab states agreed to have some limited increase in production. And it seems like that's basically about it. And so we did not hear any new agreement on expanded production or anything coming out of this Biden trip. And that's partly because, from what we're told, you know, the Saudis, they only have so much capacity to increase anyway. Like, it's not like they necessarily are doing it out of spite. There are certain limitations. And so, no, there actually was not some major breakthrough on energy. Now, it is possible there were other steps that were made, things behind the scenes that really could matter over time and that maybe we just don't know yet. But no, I mean, in terms of a big deal that could like affect the high oil prices and things, no, we haven't really seen anything like that.
We're talking to Nihal Tusi, national security correspondent at Politico, looking at President Biden's four-day trip to the Middle East. You could join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see from the White House when it comes to Saudi Arabia? How about Israel? Are you paying attention to the latest news in the Middle East, or is all your foreign policy oxygen, like a lot of the media, being sucked up by what's going on in Russia and Ukraine? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Nihal, that was Saudi Arabia. Another big visit was to Israel, and the current leadership of Israel, subject to change, I think, pretty soon with another in a series of elections on the way. Can you talk about that meeting?
Yes. The Israelis love to boast that they are the only real democracy in the Middle East. And they are definitely proving it with all these elections that they're having. They're about to have a fifth in less than 4 years. President Biden went to Israel first. It was a really key part of the trip. And actually, in many ways, Israel is the big winner from this entire trip. Throughout the Biden administration, Israel has basically gotten everything that it wanted, nearly everything. The Biden administration, either because it can't legally or politically, it's just too explosive, it has been unable to reopen the consulate that dealt with the Palestinians. It has not been able to revive the nuclear deal with Iran, something that Israel opposes. There's just been so many steps. And even the meeting with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia was actually a victory for Israel, because Israel really wants the U.S. and Saudi Arabia to get along better, because it is trying to improve its ties to Saudi Arabia and in the hopes that over time it can establish diplomatic relations with them. So overall, yeah, I mean, Joe Biden went there. He was received very well. And it was, he loves Israel. He's always been a diehard Israel supporter, and they received him with a lot of happiness, and it went quite well for him. And yeah, for the Israelis, this was a really great trip.
And a key country here that didn't get a visit is Iran. Israel, Saudi Arabia, other Sunni-led countries very worried about Iran's influence agenda in the region. How central was Iran in these meetings?
Oh, man, the day that a U.S. president goes to Iran, that will be a seismic shift. But Iran is definitely not getting a presidential visit anytime soon. It remains the number one adversary in the Middle East in the eyes of the U.S., as well as in the eyes of the Israelis and many of its Arab partners. Iran, in many ways, has become a unifying factor, kind of the common enemy that has united Arab states with Israel. It's continuing to, cause all sorts of issues. It has a number of proxy militias and militant groups and terrorist organizations that it supports throughout the Middle East. It continues with its nuclear program, although that is a complicated issue. It's still considered a major threat, and the U.S. has not been able to convince it to revive the nuclear deal that it had struck a few years back and which President Trump abandoned. Iran remains a major, major concern. I don't see any major breakthroughs though coming with that. I mean, I don't know what the plan is. And I do, believe me, I ask a lot. That's a question I ask a lot of U.S. officials in Washington. Hey, what's the plan? And, often I just don't get an answer.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Brian is with us in Neenah. Brian, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, the optics of the fist bump, I don't sanction everything that led up to, the killing or anything like that, obviously. But, so much attention has been paid to this fist bump, and we hope that we are going to find some return that's going to ultimately help our country. At the same time, I don't hear any of those voices reflecting back to when we gave legitimacy to Kim Jong-un, where there was genocide in the entire country, yet we went there for optics only. And we got nothing out of it. So I'm curious as to your speaker and comparing the two.
Brian, thanks for the call. Brian, I think referring to President Trump's high-profile meeting with Kim Jong-un. You wrote, I think, in your MBS piece about President Trump and the orb in his Saudi Arabia visit. Compare and contrast, Nihal.
Yeah, look, those were both very important visits. I mean, the Kim Jong-un visits were historic. I mean, unprecedented. No U.S. president, sitting U.S. president, had ever sat down with, met with a North Korean leader. And it was a wild shot by President Trump in hopes of breaking some taboos and trying to make some headway. He would argue, President Trump would, that he actually did lower the temperature with North Korea and that we did get something out of it, which was we were, on the verge of like some pretty heated moments with North Korea initially under President Trump, but that most of the rest of his term, like things calmed down and the North Koreans didn't really make too much noise. So, I mean, he would argue that there was something out of that. Now, I remember, I will tell you this, I personally wrote a number of stories about the human rights element of that trip and how when President Trump went there and met him and they acted like they were best friends. They met in Singapore, just to be clear, initially, that it was a real blow to the human rights efforts, especially because there were so many people who are held in gulags or otherwise being poorly treated in North Korea, which is closest thing that the world has to a totalitarian state. So yeah, no, look, there was a lot of coverage of that. I think it's given how much coverage there was of everything, it might be hard to kind of remember all of that at the same time. But no, there are definite parallels. I will say, I think Saudi Arabia is much more integrated into the world economy, though, than North Korea is. And so there's a huge difference there.
Thanks for that call. We're talking about President Biden's trip to the Middle East this weekend with Politico senior foreign affairs correspondent Nihal Tusi. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What did you think about President Biden's meeting with Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman? Do you think the president should have been more publicly firm about concerns with the Saudis and human rights issues? Do you want to see the U.S. have a better relationship with Saudi Arabia? How about Israel? Call 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Nihal Tusi, senior foreign affairs correspondent at Politico. With us today, looking at the impacts of President Biden's weekend trip to meet with leaders in the Middle East. A lot of focus on Saudi Arabia and on Israel. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How do you want the U.S. to handle its relations in the Middle East? How important do you think this region is for U.S. global interests? What question do you have about this visit? Do you want to see more support for Israel or less? What about the Palestinians, Saudi Arabia? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Nahal, something you touched on earlier, the White House has made the case that, hey, if we're not there in the Middle East, the Chinese and the Russians certainly will be. What kind of diplomatic efforts do you see from Russia and China in the region?
Oh, well, there's always ongoing outreach to those countries. I mean, they have important ties. There's visits, and, you know, the diplomats are always in touch. They're always looking for, Chinese in particular, they're always looking for trade deals. Forgive me. There's constant ongoing outreach with the countries, but it's also in terms of weapon sales and things like that. And I think that that's, you know, all of those are areas where the U.S. does not want to lose the Arab states to the orbit of those other countries. And part of it is actually because we want to sell them weapons as well. So those things all do factor in. I think it's going to be, you know, in many ways, the whole setup they have over there, especially when it comes to their weapons, is kind of configured to be more compatible with the West and the United States. So it's hard for them to simply pivot and, you know, turn to Chinese and Russian-made efforts on everything. But it's not impossible. And they are, again, they are oil-wealthy countries. They're trying to sell their oil. So if China in particular wants to buy more oil, they're going to do it. They're going to sell them the oil. I mean, it is part of it's just business.
Now, a big part of the story here, and you've touched on this as well, Nahal, the Abraham Accords. Now, this is a diplomatic effort under the Trump administration, kind of one-to-one agreements between Israel and particular Arab countries in the Middle East. This is something that the Biden administration is maybe trying to build on from their predecessor. One of the few cases, foreign or domestic, where they're trying to build on something from the Trump administration.
Yes, that's right. These accords established diplomatic relations between Israel and Bahrain and Saudi Arabia. I'm sorry, I'm losing my voice.
That's okay. We all been there.
and Sudan and Morocco. And yeah, the Biden administration says that it's trying to build on these things. They're trying to get more countries to sign on to these accords. I've heard everything from Indonesia to the Comoros, to Oman and beyond. But honestly, I'm a little surprised they haven't gotten another country yet. I don't think the Saudis are going to sign on anytime soon. That doesn't mean that they're not going to take steps to kind of get closer to Israel de facto. You know, they might do things like, I mean, for instance, they did just open their skies to Israeli planes, right? So they're going to, I think the Saudis will do certain things, but officially, are they going to sign a piece of paper? I don't think that'll happen anytime soon. But there might be other countries that in the next year or so, we could see officially sign on. It remains to be seen.
Talking to Nahal Tusi, senior correspondent for foreign affairs and national security at Politico, looking at President Biden's four-day visit in the Middle East late last week and into the weekend. Big meetings with leaders in Saudi Arabia and Israel, looking at what happened, what was said, what, if anything, the U.S. got out of it. You can join in, still a little time, at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Bill is with us in Superior. Bill, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. So the stop in Israel and the talks about strengthening ties, everybody knows it's common sense of why he went over there. The stop in Israel was just kind of like a little side shoot to the fact that he was going over to Saudi Arabia with his hand out to beg for oil from foreign entities, because he doesn't want to own the mistakes of completely trying to block all natural resource production and oil in the United States to try to get rid of it in the United States. But yet, let's go beg foreign countries for it. It's absolutely pathetic.
Bill, thanks for the call. Oil production is still pretty high here in the U.S., Nahal, but how much of this was handout begging for more oil?
You know, I mean, they say that it wasn't as much about oil as we, you know, the observers believe that it was. The administration really downplayed the oil aspect of it. But I think it was pretty clear that that is a big part of it. I mean, the high oil prices are affecting President Biden's poll figures. And, you know, the domestic politics aspect of this is huge. But that being said, yes, the U.S. remains, last I checked, it's the top oil producer in the world. And that hasn't changed. It's just that the war in Ukraine has just nonetheless affected confidence affected prices. And frankly, you know, oil companies like are using this moment to make money. And I think that's one of the frustrations that the Biden administration has as well, is they just feel like the oil companies could take steps to lower the prices on their own, that they don't have to be raking in all these profits. But look, yeah, he went there. Oil was a factor, even despite his efforts to deny that or downplay it. But did they get some big oil deal out of it? No. And can the Gulf states really ramp up their production that much more to make much of a difference? My understanding is that they really can't. I mean, just because you have a bunch of oil does not mean that you can actually just, you know, put it on the market the next day. It's actually super complicated. It depends on everything from the type of oil to the refineries, to your capacity, to the people, the amount of money. I mean, it's expensive and it's hard, and it's a very, very intense and complicated field. And so I don't get the sense that he had that much luck, but the administration also has a long-term view of this. I mean, this isn't just about today or tomorrow. I mean, they're hoping for a second Biden term. So they want to think long-term about the relationship as well.
Thanks for that call. And just our last half minute, Nihal, what are you watching for next?
That's a good question. I guess I can tell you, I'm going to keep an eye on human rights issues in the Middle East and in Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates and some of these countries that the U.S. is reaching out to. I'm going to see, now that there has been this outreach, what is Mohammed bin Salman going to do? Is he going to release some political prisoners, or are we going to continue to see ongoing crackdowns? I can't say that I am hopeful given their track record, but anything is possible.
Nihal, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Nihal Tusi, senior correspondent for foreign affairs and national security at Politico. She was with us today to share what we learned from President Biden's meetings this weekend in the Middle East, especially his visits to Saudi Arabia and Israel along the way.